Shoo! Go on! I yell, expecting it to hightail out the cracked porch door where it clearly snuck through. But it merely glares at me with its beady eyes before turning back to my sandwich. I give a nearby plastic bin a kick. Get out of here! The raccoon chatters at me, that odd squeaking sound grating on my nerves. And then it scampers forward. I take several stumbling steps back, losing half my plate of food to the floor and spilling my smoothie all over my jeans as I try to get away from it. It's temporarily distracted by a rolling carrot, picking it up in its nimble paws, flipping it this way and that. Are Alaska raccoons different from Toronto raccoons? Will this one attack? There's a straw broom perched in the corner. I dump the plate and glass on a nearby ledge and grab the handle, getting a good grip with two hands, ready to take a swing.
Bandit,
a deep voice calls. The raccoon stands on its hind legs and turns toward the voice, pausing to listen.
Bandit, get over here.
It takes off, squeezing through the ajar porch door. I watch, with the broom handle still gripped within my fists, as the animal trots across the lawn toward Jonah, to stop a mere foot away. It stands on its hind legs and reaches up into the air.
Hey, buddy. You getting into trouble?
Jonah gives the raccoon's head an affectionate scratch, to which it chatters back excitedly. You have got to be kidding me. My face twists in horror as realization sinks in. He's your pet?
No. You're not allowed to have raccoons as pets in the state of Alaska,
Jonah says matter-of-factly. So what is he then? Because he sure looks like a pet.
He's a raccoon that likes to hang out around my house.
Jonah's gaze narrows at the broom in my hand.
What were you planning on doing with that?
Chase him out of here before he bit me.
He won't bite you unless you give him reason to.
I think of Tim and Sid, their humps bobbing as they scurry down the driveway after rooting through bones and rotten, smelly meat packaging, and I cringe. You know they carry diseases, right? Jonah gives the raccoon one last pat before standing tall again. The raccoon scampers away.
Bandit's fine.
You named him?
Yeah, you know, because of the black mask around.
I get it, I interrupt. Super original. But also fitting. He stole my sandwich. Jonah shrugs.
Don't leave your sandwich lying around where he can steal it, then.
I didn't leave it lying around. It was on a plate, on a table, inside here. He came in here. And he made me spill my drink all over myself. I throw a hand at my jeans, covered in thick green liquid. My socks are soaked through. Jonah's eyes crinkle with amusement.
Don't be so clumsy next time.
I shoot a glare at him. Why is he even here? I thought he was working. And then, picking up my mangled food and dishes, I head inside to change into the only clean pair of clothes I have left and grab a banana to eat. When I return, Jonah's sitting in my seat. Thankfully, there's no raccoon in sight.
What is this?
He asks, nodding toward my MacBook. A computer? He throws me a flat look.
Why are you looking up charter company websites?
Because I wanted to know more about my dad's competition.
For what? You suddenly interested in taking over the family business?
He mutters. No. I scoff through a bite of my banana. But I noticed that Alaska Wild doesn't have a website. And I think that's a huge mistake. Everyone has a website nowadays. The 16-year-old girl in our neighborhood who walks dogs has a website and an online payment option. It's the most basic way to market yourself. Jonah leans back, his legs splayed in that guy way, his arms folded across his chest. He's made himself comfortable in my chair.
We don't need to market to the villagers. They all know us. Same with our shipping contracts and the schools.
Yeah, but what about the tourists? Agnes said you're losing business with them.
Yeah, we are,
he admits.
But a website's not going to help that.
I settle into the other seat. It teeters under my weight, the metal legs uneven. If I were coming to Alaska and looking to go sightseeing or fly to another city, I wouldn't even know about Alaska Wild.
Of course you would. We're listed on all the big Alaska tourism pages. and we're in the directory.
Yeah, but there's no information. Nothing about what planes you have or what your rules and refund policies are, your flying schedule, how much it would cost.
We tell them all that when they call,
he says, as if it should be obvious. Entirely missing my point. Jonah, maybe that's how people do it around here, but if you're trying to attract people from the lower 48 or whatever you called it, or from other parts of the world, it's not enough. People don't phone companies, not until they've already narrowed down their choices. People hate talking over the phone. I don't even talk to my friends over the phone if I can help it. Everyone goes online, Googles what they're looking for, picks their top two or three choices, and then calls them. A lot of people don't even call if they have questions. They email.
So they can email us.
And how are they going to find the address? You have nothing on your website, and they're not going to go hunting for it in some directory, believe me. I forge on because it seems like Jonah is listening to me. A lot of people book online, print out their receipt, and show up. And if there are other charter companies around here who have a website and all this information and pictures of planes and videos of flying to make it easy for them to decide, people are going to skip right over Alaska Wild. And honestly, if I'm paying to come to Alaska and then forking over even more money to go see mountains and wildlife or to fly into a camp, it wouldn't be with the company that can't even get a basic website together. It's not like I have specific data to prove anything I'm saying, but it's all common sense, isn't it? I mean, everyone knows this, right? Jonah still looks doubtful. Look, say I'm John Smith from Arkansas, and I want to come to Alaska to hunt. I've never been before, so I look up Alaskan hunt camps and find this one. I stand just enough to drag my seat over closer until I can reach my laptop. Jonah makes no effort to move, forcing me to lean over his thigh to reach my computer. I flip over to the tab with the camp that appeared at the top of the search earlier. And when I click on how to get here, it takes me to Alaska Aviator.
Because they've got a deal with them. We've got the same thing with River & Co.
The one that's not paying their bills on time? I lean forward, navigating to their page, accidentally bumping my knee against his. Sorry, I mumble. They have Alaska Wild and Alaska Aviator listed as options for travel there. I tap the screen with my polished tip to prove it, bumping his knee again. He doesn't shift away. So right away, when John Smith is planning his trip, Alaska Aviator is looking better to him because he has nothing to compare it against, and he has to make a decision all the way in Oklahoma.
I thought you said Arkansas.
Whatever. The point is, the only draw for him to Wild would be if it was a lot cheaper.
They're pretty even.
Well, then guess who John's going to be going with when he books his hunting trip? I lean back in my chair, feeling satisfied that I've proved my point. Maybe River & Co. isn't the problem. Maybe they're not telling these tourists to fly with these other guys. Maybe these tourists are going to them because they made it easy to pick them. Jonah's piercing gaze weighs heavily on me, his usually cold, indifferent expression replaced with curiosity.
You know how to do that? Build a website, I mean?
Yeah, I pretty much built this. I lean forward to flip to the Kala and D tab.
It's pink.
I roll my eyes. That's all aesthetics. I could figure something out for Alaska Wild.
In 4 days?
Yeah, I think so. A simple one, anyway. I shrug. What else do I have to do here? He nods slowly, his brow furrowed in thought.
It won't cost much, will it?
No. I'll use the same web designer platform that I used for that site. It's next to nothing. And I have my camera so I can take some pictures. I'm not a professional, but I'm decent enough. I took these. I click on a post that I know has a lot of scenery.
Sequins in the City,
Jonah reads out loud. Forget the title and look at the pictures.
Who's that?
He nods to Diana, who's posing in High Park, her short, blush-colored sequined skirt identical in shade to the cherry blossom trees in bloom behind her. That's my best friend.
Damn.
Okay, great. So you're into leggy blondes. Surprise, surprise, I mutter. But look at the picture.
That skirt barely covers her ass.
Jonah, I growl through a laugh, and then smack his chest, noting how hard and curved it is beneath my fingertips. Forget Diana and the short skirt. My point is, I'm pretty okay at taking pictures. And in any case, it's better than what's there now, which is nothing. His eyes are crinkled with amusement as he watches me, and I feel my mouth curling into a stupid grin in response, even though I'm mildly annoyed. You're not taking me seriously.
I am, I swear.
His hand lands on my knee, giving it a quick but tight squeeze before leaning back in his chair again.
So go ahead and do it.
Really? I can't hide my surprise. He shrugs.
You make a good argument. I still don't know if I buy what you're selling, but it can't hurt.
Should I ask my dad first?
Nah, just tell him you're doing it. He'll be happy.
You think so?
You kidding? His kid showing interest in Wild?
I wouldn't exactly call it an interest in Wild so much as an interest in feeling useful and having something to do. But I keep that to myself. Well, okay then.
Okay then.
He nods resolutely.
You and me can bang this out together.
Whoa, wait.
Us?
I feel my eyes pop.
How else are you going to add all that stuff about planes and Wild's history and all that? You think you can figure all that out? In 4 days? And I know everything there is to know about this place.
Right. I guess. Me and Jonah working together on a website for Alaska Wild. This should be interesting, I mumble under my breath. His lips curl into a smirk.
Why do you say that?
Because you're you.
And you're you,
he retorts, adding more softly,
except you're actually smart. I'm shocked.
Shut up. A spark of satisfaction flickers inside me. Jonah thinks I'm smart. He sighs, his gaze settling on his folded hands.
All right, all right. Look, we got off on the wrong foot, and that's on me. Yeah, I can admit when I've been an ass.
So, is this like a truce or something? Is Jonah capable of being civil?
Or something.
He glances at his watch and then eases out of my chair. His heavy boots thump against the floorboards as he heads for the door that leads off the porch. My dad told you to be nice to me, didn't he?
Nope.
I don't buy that, especially since my dad said he'd tell Jonah to ease off me. And something makes me think they're too close for Jonah to shrug my dad's requests off. Hey. He pauses at the door.
Yup.
What do you know about my dad's diagnosis? My dad made it clear that he doesn't want me to bring it up with him, and Agnes has already told me what she knows. So the only person left to ask is Jonah. His shoulders sag with a heavy exhale.
I know he has cancer, and he doesn't want to talk about it while you're here.
What do you think that means?
That he has cancer, and he doesn't want to talk about it while you're here,
he says matter-of-factly. I roll my eyes at his back. But he hasn't let on how bad it is? There's a long pause, and then he admits, almost reluctantly,
he asked me if I'd ever consider buying the company from him.
Surprise hits me. He's thinking of selling Alaska Wild?
He's weighing his options. He said he might want to retire.
My dad retiring? He's only 53. Then again, he's been running the place since his early 20s. Maybe after 30 years, he's finally had enough. But what would he do? Would he stay in Alaska? Or would he be ready to finally try something new? What did you tell him? He chuckles.
I don't have that kind of money. Plus, I don't want to be stuck behind a desk all day long for the next 30 years. I like the way things are right now. No matter what, though, I told him I'd take over running Wild for as long as he needs me to.
Much like my dad took over for my grandfather when he started his treatment. I swallow the growing lump in my throat. That's nice of you, to be willing to do that.
Yeah, well, Ren's family to me. There's nothing I wouldn't do for him.
He clears the gruffness from his voice. My chest tightens at the rare hint of emotion. Do you think he'll get through this?
I think that if there's any way you can stay longer, you should.
I could, I blurt out without thinking. Jonah turns to regard me, his eyebrow arched in question. I shrug. I got restructured out, so I don't have a job to get home to right now. His gaze roams my features.
Then you should stay another week or two, or even longer if you can grow a pair and deal with how things work around here.
I give him a flat look, but there's no hint of humor on his face.
Trust me, Calla. You'll regret it for the rest of your life if you don't.
He sounds so definitive. Does that have anything to do with regrets from his own past with his father? And what would that even mean? A full month in Bangor, Alaska? Would my father be okay with a houseguest for that long? Jonah's gaze drifts over the soft pink cardigan I've wrapped around myself.
I called over to Anchorage to check on your stuff before I came home. Sounds like they've got a mechanical problem with the plane. Your suitcases won't be coming today.
I groan. Seriously?
Roll with it.
He leaves me stewing, strolling out the door and across the lawn toward his house, a little bounce in his step. The kitchen door creaks open, and I look over my shoulder in time to see my dad step through. Long day, huh? He's been at work for almost 14 hours.
They all are.
With a tired-sounding sigh, he tosses some paperwork on the counter and then rubs his eyes.
Something smells good.
I dump a handful of pepper slices into the bowl. I'm making us dinner. Chicken Greek salad with homemade dressing. That should be bottled and marketed as liquid gold for what it cost me in basic ingredients plus cab fare. It'll be ready in 5. I hope you like black olives.
Yep. Sure do.
There's a long pause, and I can feel his gaze on me.
Thank you, Calla. This is nice.
No big deal. It's just the first meal I've ever made for us, I think, with a small smile. One of those seemingly small and inconsequential things in life that I'll probably remember for the rest of my life.
How was your day?
I'm itching to tell him about the plan to build a website for Wild. I'm desperate to ask him if he's truly considering retiring. Where exactly do I start? Quick footfalls pound up the front porch stairs, and a moment later the door flies open. Mabel bursts through with a wide grin on her face, out of breath, as if she just ran down the driveway. Just in time.
Hey, kiddo.
Dad's face instantly softens with a smile.
What do you got there?
My specialty. She holds up the foil-covered glass dish in her oven-mitt-clad hands, announcing with dramatic flair and an energy that I don't think I could manage on my wildest days. The cheesiest, sauciest, most delicious pasta you've ever had! Just came out of the oven! Setting the dish down on the table, she peels the foil back, letting the long strings of cheese dangle in the air. I finally perfected it! My digestive system would explode if I ate that.
Wow, and there's enough here to keep me fed for a week.
My dad chuckles. To me, he explains,
Mabel has discovered a passion for cooking. She's been experimenting in the kitchen a lot this past year and using me as her guinea pig. I think this is the 8th week you've made this?
9th, she corrects proudly. But this is the one, I'm telling you.
9 weeks in a row of cheesy pasta.
He gives me a pointed look, and I stifle my laugh. Even through the distinct twinge of offense I feel inside, this clueless 12-year-old girl has inserted herself into one of only a handful of nights I have with my father. I don't live across the road. I can't just trot down the driveway with dinner in my hands anytime I wish. I'm supposed to be making dinner for him. She's only 12, and I doubt she's barged in on my night with my dad with malicious intentions, and yet I can't help feeling this resentment for her right now. This does, however, explain the empty fridge, and how my dad survives on a regular basis.
Calla, wait until you try this.
Mabel pulls three plates from the cupboard. I wish I could, Mabel. But I have a dairy allergy, I explain with an apologetic cringe.
Really? That sucks. So what are you going to eat then?
Mabel wanders over to look in my bowl. Her nose crinkles.
Oh, well, it's a good thing I made dinner for us then.
I frown. Why?
Because Ren hates vegetables with a passion, especially salad.
My dad cringes.
I think hate is a strong word, Mabel.
No, it's not. Mom calls him Baby Ren when he comes over for dinner because she has to cut them up into tiny little bites and hide them in sauce so he'll eat them.
She grins at me as she digs out a serving spoon from a drawer. So he was being polite earlier. Now that I think back to it, there weren't any peas and carrots on his dinner plate last night. He sighs and then offers me a sheepish smile. Scooping a generous portion of pasta onto two plates, Mabel collects them and heads for the living room, hollering back, "Are you black this time, or is it my turn?"
"I can't remember. You pick."
He stalls at the doorway.
"We usually play a game of checkers every night. Missed a couple there."
"Because I came to Alaska, I gather." He hesitates, biting his bottom lip.
"So, a dairy allergy?"
"Yeah."
"That's why there's all that soya milk in the fridge?"
"Soy," I correct. "And yeah, it's for my coffee."
"Huh. Well, now I know."
"Right. Like, now I know that you wouldn't have eaten any of this." I wave the knife in my hand over the salad bowl.
"I would have eaten every last bite, kiddo,"
he says with certainty, then disappears into the living room, leaving me smiling at a wall of ducks. Mabel lets out a whoop, snatching the black checker piece from the board and adding it to her growing pile.
"What's it like, losing 14 games straight to a little girl?"
My dad's brow is pulled tight as he puzzles over the game board as if replaying the last moves.
"Seems I've taught you too well,"
he murmurs, leaning back in his lazy boy. His gaze wanders over to the couch where I sit cross-legged, my MacBook nestled in my lap.
"You sure you don't want to give it a try, Calla? 'Cause I'm on the search for an opponent I can beat. My ego needs it."
"Maybe tomorrow," I say in a noncommittal way. Dad chuckles.
"Thank you for lying to spare my feelings. Your mom always flat out refused."
Mabel's curious eyes drift from me to Ren and back to me. I wonder how much she knows about our history. Can she sense the tension in the air when we're in a room together? A tension that, thankfully, seems to be ebbing away ever so slowly. My dad begins placing pieces back on the board.
"Same time, same place, kiddo?"
I try to ignore the way my gut tightens. He's called her that at least a half dozen times tonight, and every time has been like a siren for me. A stark reminder that this kid has something with him that I never had, even all those years ago when I'd still call and he'd still answer. Despite the fact that they're not blood related. Despite the fact that he and Agnes aren't even together. They have a genuine father-daughter relationship. Mabel glances at the clock on the wall and says with reluctance, "Fine," but then adds with a devilish spark in her eye, "I'll let you win tomorrow."
"That'd be a nice change."
"It's on. See ya." She leans forward and plants a quick kiss on my dad's forehead, with not a hint of hesitation, as if it's something she'd done 1,000 times. How will she react when she finds out he has cancer? The fact that everyone has sheltered her from that grim truth so far tells me it won't be well. She grabs the sweater she draped over the back of my dad's chair. "Hey, Calla, you should come berry picking with me tomorrow. A bunch of us from in town are going in the morning." I push aside my dark thoughts. "Yeah, maybe? I can't remember the last time I did that." "Okay." She shrugs like it doesn't matter to her one way or another. But based on what Agnes said about me being the shiny new thing, I'm guessing that's an act. Just as quickly and easily as Mabel strolled through the door, she now strolls out, leaving a palpable calm in her wake. "I hope you liked the pasta," I murmur, biting into my apple. "There's enough left to feed 20 people.
"To be honest, I can't tell the difference between this week's and the last 8 weeks' worth,
my dad murmurs, eyeing my empty plate, which I filled twice with my own dinner.
Too bad you can't help me with it. Seems like you can put away a lot for such a tiny person.
I think the time difference is messing with my appetite, I admit. Plus, Jonah's trash panda ruined my lunch, so I didn't eat much today. My dad frowns.
Trash panda?
Raccoon.
Ah.
My dad nods knowingly, smiling.
So you've met Bandit.
He's keeping that thing as a pet. You know that, right? Dad chuckles.
Jonah found him living under his house last year. He was just a kit. Guess he'd lost his family. So he started tossing him scraps of food to help him out until he moved on his way. But he never did.
Of course he didn't. No one's going to leave an all-you-can-eat buffet to starve in the wild.
Jonah built him a little den on the porch and he lives in there. Seems quite comfortable.
He was petting it today, I cringe.
Bandit's a friendly enough little guy. He likes the attention.
Dad sounds like he approves of this. You guys do realize that raccoons carry disease, right? Dad waves my concern away.
Nah, he's fine. Jonah's friend is a vet. She gave Bandit his rabies shot. Boy, did they have a time of it. Jonah had to put a sleeping dart into him.
He pauses.
Of course, I don't think Marie's supposed to be vaccinating them, so, as far as anyone knows...
He gives me a look of warning. Who am I going to tell? Besides my mother and Diana, of course. Dad shifts checker pieces around absently.
What about you? I remember you being pretty set on getting a dog way back when. Did that ever happen?
No. Simon's allergic to pretty much everything on four legs. That's fine, though. I have too much going on in my life anyway. I had a fish one time, though, for Christmas. He frowns in thought.
You know, I think I remember that.
His name was Guppy. He was a guppy. I roll my eyes at my childish simplicity. He lasted a week before he went for the golden flush.
So, no pets.
No pets, I snort. Not unless you count Tim and Sid. My dad's eyebrows arch in question. These two neighborhood raccoons that have been terrorizing me forever.
Terrorizing you?
He echoes, amusement flickering in his gaze.
They sound like horrible creatures.
They are horrible, and huge, twice the size of Bandit, and vicious. Not that they've ever done more than annoy the hell out of me.
Did you know that raccoons aren't native to Alaska?
I did not know that, I say slowly.
Yes, they were introduced into the state in the 1930s for the fur trade.
That's fascinating. I can't keep the dryness from my tone, but it earns his soft laughter.
Truth is, we're more worried about the foxes, as far as rabies goes. Those little buggers are always getting into villages and attacking the dogs. Marie flies in from Anchorage once a month for a few days to run a clinic in Bangor, and Jonah usually takes her out to the villages so she can give rabies shots to the strays. She's a bit of a crusader, that one.
This Marie person and Jonah sound pretty close if she's risking trouble to vaccinate Bandit for him, I say casually. Are they, like, together or something? My dad's brow furrows.
No, they're just friends, as far as I know anyway. Though Jonah doesn't talk about the girls he's dating.
He falters over that word, making me think that dating wouldn't be the best word he'd use to describe what Jonah does with girls he's interested in.
Of course, Agnes is convinced that Marie would like to be more, but she says that about most girls that come around him.
I don't get it, I murmur, baffled. Kaylee the coffee girl, Marie the vet, even 12-year-old Mabel has a crush on the big brute. Though I'm guessing Jonah's a hell of a lot nicer to them than he has been with me, if that flirtatious interaction between him and Kaylee is any indication. But what I really don't get is that twinge of something I felt when Jonah was ogling Diana in her short skirt. It's been lingering in my stomach ever since. It feels like a shade of disappointment, but it can't possibly be because I don't like Jonah that way. I'm barely tolerating him at this point. My dad regards me peculiarly for a long moment.
You two still not getting along?
I think we might have turned a corner today. He's going to help me build a website for Alaska Wild. Maybe we'll come out on the other end of it as friends. That or one of us won't come out on the other end at all. My dad's eyes widen.
A website?
By the time I'm finished explaining the reasoning, just as I explained it to Jonah earlier today, my dad's gaze is thoughtful.
Did he ask you to do this?
No, I offered.
And that's what you've been working on all evening?
He nods toward my computer. Yeah, I've already got a skeleton set up. I climb off the couch and walk over to set my laptop where the checkers board had been. We can play with the colors and styles to make it better, and then all we need to do is add content and pictures.
I wish I had half your business sense. Would have made running wild a lot easier.
He smiles thoughtfully.
You turned out pretty smart, kiddo.
I feel a flutter of nostalgia in my stomach. I know that nickname isn't reserved solely for me anymore, but it still feels like a connection to oh so long ago. Jonah also told me you asked him if he wanted to buy Alaska Wild.
He told you that, hey?
My dad presses his lips together, his gaze drifting to the matted carpet. Was he not supposed to?
I guess I didn't tell him not to,
he says after a moment.
Of everyone I know, he's the one who'd do right by it. There's been some interest from Aero Airlines to buy me out, but Wild would get swallowed up.
He smiles sadly.
Don't know if I'm ready to see that happen yet.
But Jonah says he doesn't have the money anyway, so what option does that leave my dad with? He said you were thinking of retiring. He takes a long, deep breath.
Considering it. It's been a long 30 years. Wouldn't mind taking a bit of rest.
He pauses and then asks,
You tired?
Not really. I had a nap this afternoon. That Benadryl knocked me out. Thankfully, the swelling has not expanded beyond the blue ink lines I drew.
I've got some movies over there in the cupboard. They're old, but they're some of my favorites.
Is my dad asking me to watch a movie with him in a roundabout way? Is this Ren Fletcher trying to get to know his daughter again? I could go and pick one for us to watch, I say tentatively.
Yeah? Well, okay then.
I shut down my laptop and cast it aside, and then head for the corner cabinet, but not before catching the small smile of satisfaction touching my dad's lips. Chapter 13. I stir to the distant sound of someone knocking. A moment later, the knock sounds again, only it's more like pounding. And it's on my bedroom door. I push off my eye mask and squint against the glow of sunlight from around the edge of the curtains. Yeah? I call out, my voice hoarse with sleep. There's no answer, only more knocking. It's an urgent sound, and it puts me on edge. I wrestle with my covers to free myself and stumble for the door, throwing it open. Jonah is filling the doorway. What's wrong? Is my dad okay? I ask in a panic, searching the hall for any signs of him. He stares hard at me for a long moment, his gaze skating over my features. Jonah? He blinks several times.
So this is what you look like without all that shit on your face.
I sigh with exasperation. I'm not in the mood for your crap this early. What do you want? Where's my dad? Jonah's eyes drop to my chest, reminding me that I'm in a cotton tank top, braless, and the air is crisp. I fold my arms across myself reflexively, even as a strange shiver dances along my skin. His gaze snaps up.
He had to fly to Anchorage. I thought you'd be up.
I study those glacier blue irises for a moment. They look somehow darker, heated. Is he turned on? We stayed up late to watch a movie, and then I couldn't fall asleep. What time is it anyway?
7. Get dressed. You're flying today.
That pulls me out of whatever fog I'm trapped in. I'm what?
It's a clear day, and your dad wants you to see more of Alaska. You've been here 3 days already. It's time to get you in a plane.
With you? I say doubtfully. He smirks.
Come on. You can get some pictures for Wild's website. You said you wanted to do that, right?
Anxiety is quickly rising in my belly like a twirling windstorm at the thought of getting into a plane, with Jonah, again. But with it is a strange sense of excitement. Besides, I don't want to spend the day sitting around looking for ways to kill time until my dad comes home. Fine. Give me an hour. He barks out a laugh.
You have 5 minutes.
Yeah, right. I can't get ready in 5 minutes. I'm not you. I get a flat look in return.
You're in Alaska. Throw on some clothes, brush your teeth, and let's go.
Half an hour. If I skip showering and rush my makeup, I can do that.
5 minutes.
20, I barter. His normally icy gaze slides over my mouth, my throat, my chest, and farther before coming back up to meet my eyes. His hard swallow fills the silence.
You don't need all that to look good, Calla. Seriously.
My words falter. Was that a compliment? From Jonah? And why is this heated gaze I'm seeing not making me uncomfortable? Why does it seem to be doing the exact opposite, sending a small thrill through me? Am I?
No.
Even if the top half of his face is attractive and his body is impressive, I can't be attracted to him. I can't get past the Yeti hair. But something about the look in Jonah's eyes is arousing my curiosity. 15 minutes, I say, clearing the wobble from my voice.
If you're not out in 5, I will come in here, throw you over my shoulder, and carry you out.
You will not. He gives me a wicked smile in return, one that makes my blood start to flow.
Try me. And just know, I won't care if you're not dressed.
He pushes a few buttons on his watch. Did you just start a timer for me?
5 minutes. I'll be waiting in the truck.
I glower at his retreating back.
Tick-tock.
Asshole. With a huff, I dive for my jeans. Are you trying to hit every last crack in the pavement? I snap, glaring at my own reflection in the vanity mirror as I attempt to apply a second coat of mascara to my eyelashes.
You're in the Alaskan bush. Stop with all that,
he mutters, but slows a touch. Still, the ground is too bumpy for a steady hand. I give up on a second coat, cap my mascara, and throw it into my purse. Why does everyone keep calling it the bush, anyway? The bush means dense forest where I'm from. There's no forest here. There are barely any trees. No bush. I add quietly, besides the one on your face.
Aren't we a bit plucky this morning?
He sounds amused. I slide my sunglasses on to block the blinding sun, a welcome change from the drizzle, but not when it's shining directly into my eyes. If you don't like it, next time don't drag me out of bed and chase me out the door. I'm never in good spirits when I'm forced to rush in the morning.
I gave you an extra 3 minutes.
You're too kind. I reach for the travel mug of coffee I managed to fill before Jonah plowed into the kitchen, his watch alarm dinging. I don't know how you keep all the women around here from beating down your door. His soft chuckle sends a warm shiver down my spine. I hate that he has an appealing laugh.
Glad to see that you have a little fire in you after all.
I guess you bring out the best in me, I mutter. I'm not normally like this. It's as if I'm itching for a fight. He takes the next right turn too quickly, and coffee splashes onto my white cotton t-shirt. Damn it! I brush it away, but it's no use.
Relax. It's just a t-shirt.
It cost me $100.
You paid $100 for that?
Jonah's eyebrows tighten as he looks at me with a clear, you're an idiot expression. What? It wears well and still looks new after 50 washes.
For $100, I sure as shit hope it washes itself.
Are you saying that your high-quality clothing from the local grocery store doesn't? I cast a cutting look at his shirt, which, despite being basic, looks nice on him. He smirks.
Have you been enjoying your soy milk these last couple mornings?
Crap. I completely forgot. And of course he'd bring that up after I delivered a low blow just to make me feel extra small. He doesn't fight fair. Thank you for that. I hesitate. That was nice of you.
I didn't do it for you. I did it for everyone who has to be around you.
I grit my teeth to stop from responding and turn my body away from him, focusing on the airport ahead. So much for our truce. Agnes's sharp eyes shift from me to Jonah to me, the curiosity shining in them.
To go out, to come back, right? She needs me to fly, so she can't do away with me.
Jonah accepts a small ambulance red case with a strap from Sunny and hoists it into the back of the orange and white plane.
At least, not until we get back.
Thank God this plane is bigger, I note, eyeing the two seats side by side in the front and another row behind. The seat material is a deep burgundy that clashes terribly with the orange stripe on the exterior. Not that color coordination matters to me. I just want this thing to stay in the air.
Here, you'll need that.
Jonah tosses a thin-knit black hoodie to me. Agnes studies my face as I tug it on.
You look different today, Calla.
That's because Jonah barely gave me time to pee, let alone put makeup on. I feel naked and self-conscious. I can't remember the last time I went out in public barefaced. I don't even go to the gym without my eyes done. Agnes smiles warmly.
I like the barely time to pee look. It suits you.
I yank the zipper closed and roll up the long sleeves that reach an inch past my fingertips. It's far too big for me, but I'm not drowning in it as badly as I'd expect, given it's Jonah's. And I can tell it's Jonah's because it smells like him. Like woodsy soap and minty something. Do you think I'll get my clothes today?
Yes, definitely. Your dad is bringing your suitcases back with him.
Oh, thank God. I can't wait to have my rubber boots. I peer down at my dusty running shoes. Ruined.
All set?
Jonah asks, looming beside me. There's an odd energy about him that I haven't felt before. Is he always like this when he's about to fly? I didn't feel it yesterday. Where are we going anyway?
Would it mean anything if I told you?
No, I admit. But is it in the mountains? Because after my first experience, plus that story about Mabel's father, I'm out if mountains are involved.
Nope.
Jonah lifts his baseball cap to smooth his scraggly mop of hair back before sliding the cap back on.
Hey, Aggie, did George leave for Holy Cross already?
Still waiting on a package. He'll take off as soon as it shows up.
And the supply run to St. Mary's?
Joe's probably landing right about now.
Good. Finally. Those guys have been waiting weeks for that ammunition ahead of the coming hunt,
he murmurs. Despite my annoyance with him, I can't help but admire the guy, seeing firsthand how in tune Jonah is to Wild's day-to-day operations. I can see why my dad relies on him so much, and why he'd think Jonah would be a suitable fit to keep the family business that's been the Fletcher's lifeblood for decades alive, and how critical Jonah's help is going to be in the coming months and years.
Okay, then. We're set.
Where my stomach was tight before, now it begins to twist and turn with an odd mix of dread and excitement as I watch Jonah climb into the plane and slide on his headset.
Have fun, Calla.
Agnes begins backing away. Sunny is waiting for me with one hand on the door, anxious to close it. Orange sticks dangle from his free fingers. I climb into my seat. It's not nearly as crammed in here as it was in the Super Cub, but it's far from roomy, which means Jonah's arm is pressed against mine from shoulder to elbow and will be for as long as we're in here. There's no way around that with a pilot his size, I accept, and so I try to focus my thoughts on the front of the plane instead. It's nothing but a panel of dials and switches and levers, with carved out space on either side for our legs. Jonah's fingers smoothly flick and press and pull over the panel with the expertise of someone who has done this 1,000 times over. A low rumble erupts from the engine of the plane, and the propeller rotates once, twice, before the individual blades blur. Jonah wordlessly holds a headset out for me. I accept it, acutely aware of how our fingers graze in the process. Even if I am not attracted to him, even if I still want to punch him in the face.
Can you hear me?
His deep voice rumbles in my ear. Yes. How old is this plane? Because it looks like one of those cars from the movie Grease, with quilted sides and the big metal handles to wind down the window and the door.
Older than both of us.
Oh, great. Cars half my age fall apart on the road, and I'm supposed to trust this hunk of metal in the air?
Don't touch the yoke.
The what? His muscular arm bumps me as he reaches out to tap the black thing in front of me that reminds me of an oversized arcade game controller. It's identical to the one in front of him.
Or the pedals on the floor. Those control the rudders.
I don't even know what rudders are. More importantly, where's the barf bag?
You won't need it.
My one experience flying with you says otherwise.
You're not gonna get sick.
You can't just will me not to. Where is it? He shakes his head and sighs heavily.
Under your seat.
While Jonah signals into the airport air traffic controller, I reach below and search until my fingertips catch the soft paper edge. I pull it out and tuck it into a narrow holder on the side of the door.
Relax. There's no need to be scared.
Jonah warns into my ear as the plane begins to roll forward. I don't bother answering. Instead, focusing on Sunny as he strolls alongside us, waving those orange sticks. The plane bumps and jolts over the cracks in the pavement, bringing back an odd and dreaded sense of déjà vu. I tug on my seatbelt to tighten it, peering around at the small army of my father's planes, some being loaded by busy grounds crew workers, others awaiting small clusters of tourists. I can't tell if the runway ahead of us seems narrow and short against the wide expanse of flat land that surrounds us, or if it's because the runway is, in fact, narrow and short.
I don't know how you can be Ren's daughter and freak out this much in a small plane.
Because my first time in a small plane was a horrendous experience with a horrible, mean pilot, I throw back. His chest heaves.
Look, it was a shitty thing for me to do, and I'm sorry.
We've reached the end of Wild's runway. I turn to meet his icy blue eyes and find rare sincerity in them. Why'd you do it, then?
I don't know. I guess I wanted to see what Ren Fletcher's daughter was made of.
What I'm made of? I snort. Well, you came close to seeing what my stomach contents were made of.
Yeah, that wasn't part of my plan.
His brow furrows tightly.
I saw all those pictures of you and figured you were one of those uppity city chicks that I can't stand.
I frown. What pictures?
I don't know. The ones Mabel showed me on her phone.
He must be talking about my Instagram account. What's wrong with those pictures?
Nothing, just when girls look like you do.
He shakes his head.
I guess I wanted to knock you down a few pegs from the get-go.
Like I do. Like a Barbie doll, according to him. So what? I'm not an uppity city chick that you can't stand anymore?
You're definitely uppity.
His lips twist with a wry smile.
But you're all right.
He radios into the air control tower while that strange mix of fear and thrill swirl inside. We wait in silence for the approval to take off.
So, I was your first time?
Jonah murmurs mildly. What?
That's what you just said. I was your first time.
It clicks, and I roll my eyes, even as my cheeks flush. Yes, and you were subpar. You should be embarrassed. His deep chuckle reverberates in my chest. Air control calls in, giving him the all-clear message. If I die today, I'm going to kill you. I clench my thighs against the sudden urge to pee.
That would take talent,
he murmurs, his strong hands gripping the yoke. Seriously, though, where are you taking me? He flicks a few more switches.
I'm going to show you that Wild is about a hell of a lot more than making a buck,
he says, echoing the bitter words I'd spoken only days ago, next to the Myers cashier. I hold my breath as the plane begins to accelerate. Chapter 14. I gape at the expanse of deep blue and rich green below. I've never seen so many lakes before. Countless oddly shaped bodies of water are scattered as far as I can see. So many that I can't tell if the land is interspersed with water or if the water is interspersed with land. And in the center of it all is a colony of rectangular buildings, their roofs a vibrant collection of reds, greens, and blues.
This is all part of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Ahead of us is the Bering Sea,
Jonah explains, his deep voice filling my ears. I aim Simon's cannon and attempt to capture a few pictures of the breathtaking landscape. The glare from the sun bouncing off the glass makes it challenging.
How are you feeling?
Fine. This is definitely a better plane. Am I yelling, though? He grins, flashing that perfect white-toothed smile.
Nah, you're good.
His hawkish eyes rove the skies around us.
It's a great day for flying. Not as much wind as normal.
Plus, you're so much better than that last asshole pilot I had. I struggle to keep a straight face as I snap pictures of the colorful town, feeling his gaze on my profile, waiting for his clever response.
That's Quigilinuk, where we're going,
he says instead. It feels like we just took off.
It's only a 13-minute flight. Most of the trips to the villages are that short. Even getting all the way up to Barrow takes less than 2 hours from us, and that's Alaska's northernmost point.
Jonah tips the plane to the right, and I feel a surge of butterflies in my stomach. Though, I'll admit, it's not nearly as terrifying as it once was. While the view may be picturesque from above, the reality down below is another story. I finally find my breath and my tongue again. Are all the village airports like this? If you can even call this place an airport, because if they are, I have no interest in seeing more of Alaska.
Nah, this is one of the most dangerous ones,
Jonah says casually, seeming unfazed by the jerks and bumps of the plane as he steers us along a narrow, uneven gravel road with water on both sides. We basically just landed on a patch of an island. And you thought it'd be a great idea to bring me with you?
Baptism by fire.
I've already been baptized, thanks. Not that I've been to church in 2 decades. I take a calming breath. I thought we were going to skid into the water. Jonah smirks, pulling off his headset as we finally come to a stop not far from a windowless cerulean blue shed where 2 people linger, an ATV beside them. He flicks a series of switches that brings the propeller to a slow halt and cuts the engine.
Maybe you would have with another pilot, but I'm that good.
And that cocky. Unfastening his seatbelt, he stretches his body to reach behind my seat, his solid chest pressing against my shoulder as he wrestles to unsecure something. I can smell the mint on his breath. It makes me press my lips together with worry that my breath isn't nearly as fresh. The 2 people are walking toward our plane. They're clad much like everyone else I've seen in Alaska so far. Layers of casual flannel and cotton on top, jeans and boots. Why are we here again?
To drop off a portable ventilator.
Finally, he heaves out the red case by one arm. I'm forced to shift away so as not to get knocked in the head by it.
Come on. Time to meet one of Wild's customers.
Throwing open his door, he deftly slips out. I'm not nearly as graceful in my descent, losing my footing and stumbling on my way down. By the time I round the plane, Jonah's already handing over the case. With all the sand kicking up in the wind the past couple days, the woman says, at least today's not so bad. She's a middle-aged Alaska Native woman with a kind face and sooty black hair tied in a ponytail. She has a slight accent that is similar to my dad's and Agnes's and Michael's and pretty much every other person I've met who has lived in Alaska their whole life. It reminds me of a girl from university who grew up almost 8 hours away in Sault Ste. Marie. She had a distinctive way of saying things. Vowels sounded longer, certain consonants were left off. In general, she didn't rush her words. Even though the dialects aren't the same, there's a distinctively northern sound.
This should help her out. I'm sorry it took so long to get here.
Jonah does his hair hat smoothing thing. I wonder if his hat actually needs adjusting or if it's an unconscious move.
These new ones are so much smaller. The woman marvels at the case in her hand.
Evelyn said you harassed Anchorage until they gave it up. They were telling her next week, and that's bullshit. They had this one sitting in a storeroom just in case.
You're a lifesaver, Jonah. The woman's curious gaze shifts to me.
Enid, this is Calla, Ren's daughter. She's visiting from Toronto. I'm showing her what we do.
The woman's face melts with a smile.
Everyone around here knows your dad, and Jonah.
She nods at him.
They always help. It costs, but they help. Keeping planes in the air isn't cheap,
Jonah says in a lecturing tone. She waves it away with a gentle chuckle.
I know, I'm teasing. You guys are the best, though. I can always count on you. We're gonna head out. You get that ventilator to the little girl right away and call the office if you need anything else,
Jonah says, already taking steps backward.
Tell Ren to visit soon. I'll have some red seaweed for him,
Enid calls out. I smile and, with a small wave, we begin our trek back to our plane. Red seaweed?
They eat a lot of it here.
Does my dad?
Hates it. But you never turn down food from a villager. They hunt and gather everything they eat. It's a lot of work, and it's a big deal when they offer it to you.
Is Enid the doctor?
Nah, she's kind of like a nurse. She's been trained to give basic care, and she reports to the doctors in Bangor regularly. Sometimes we'll fly a doctor out to run a clinic and see the villagers.
So if someone needs to get to the hospital...
Medevac for emergencies, otherwise they call us. We've picked up people in some serious pain before.
His tone turns somber.
Those flights always feel 5 times as long.
But I'll bet Jonah never balks at doing them. He may be an ass, but he seems to be an ass with a drive for helping others. What's wrong with the little girl?
Severe asthma. Her inhaler hasn't been helping much lately. She needs the ventilator, and the one they had, a dinosaur from the sounds of it, quit last week. Now at least the poor kid will be able to breathe again.
He sighs, and in that simple sound, I sense great relief. Why would her family live all the way out here if she's got medical problems? If I were them, I'd move to Bangor. He steals a glance my way, the frown on his forehead deep.
Because her family has lived here for hundreds of years. This is their home. This is what they know. This is how they want to live.
He says it so matter-of-factly, as if there's no other explanation and there's no need to elaborate. I don't get it.
You don't have to. You just have to respect it.
Now I'm the one getting lectured by Jonah. Another thought strikes me. Is this why you rushed me out the door this morning?
Do you mean, was this little girl's ability to breathe more important than your vanity?
I roll my eyes, taking that as confirmation. You could have told me. Then I wouldn't have assumed you were just being your usual dick self.
Where's the fun in that?
He opens my door and holds it for me. So you do have manners, I murmur, climbing into my seat.
I usually reserve them for ladies, but I'll make an exception in this case.
He throws back without missing a beat, slamming my door shut before I have a chance to retort. Bastard, I mutter, biting my bottom lip against the smile that threatens to form. His cutting quips don't come with the same sting they did in the beginning, though. I actually think I'm beginning to enjoy this banter. I wait for him as he does 2 slow circles around the plane, his calloused fingers smoothing over the metal body, his brow furrowed in intense scrutiny. Finally, he climbs in. Is there something wrong with the plane?
No cracks, no leaks. We're good.
So, where to next? I ask, as he starts flicking switches again.
You mean you're not bailing on me yet?
He says it in a joking tone, but I sense a degree of doubt. Do you want me to bail? Has he reached his limit of having me for a passenger? There's a long pause.
No, I don't.
Well, good then. Just don't go into the water, okay? He grins, sliding on his headset.
If you thought landing here was exciting, wait till we take off.
Jonah cuts the engine. After a day of listening to its near-constant roar,
The ensuing silence is all the more serene. Pushing off my headset, I sink back into my seat and gaze over the Alaska Wild buildings.